Hi. We are here. It is the Juiciest Bites podcast. Bits podcast. Oh no. Actually, the Juiciest Bites podcast would be our spin-off cooking show, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And it would mostly be like Nicolas Cage fruit references, I think. Mm-hmm. We talk about.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So we're the hosts of this podcast and maybe future spinoff podcasts.
Yes.
Who knows?
Stand by.
But I'm Charlie.
And I'm Mandy.
And we are house experts extraordinaires.
Yes. Thank you for joining us in this house-a-thon.
House-a-thon. Because this is episode 3 now of our house movie series.
Yes.
Following up Road House and Lighthouse with Flying Dagger House. So this was your recommendation.
Yes.
Props for once again recommending a movie that's like much more fun than my recommendations have been lately. So for those of you following at home, Mandy was the one who brought Roadhouse to your ears. And I was responsible for suggesting The Lighthouse. So
it's fun in its own
for
way.
For my sins. Is it?
Well, I liked it. I had fun talking about it.
Okay, yeah, and that's what counts. So first of all, do you have any house news? What are your feelings about houses? How have your feelings about houses been changing as we've talked about houses?
Like movie houses?
What does it feel like to be house? Well, not just in general.
I like my house.
Your house is good. You've
yes.
got a good house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else house related in your life that you want to mention?
I mean, nothing going on, but this movie actually, can I talk about what this movie made me feel about houses?
Yeah.
Okay. So this movie got me thinking about a house as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Like a house as a group
Familia.
Of chosen family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you kind of group together against the forces of government or those in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really, this version of house to me was a house of safety, but also of violence,
mm-hmm.
and of rules.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of the most like a family that we've seen so far.
Yeah, much less like physical house space, much more like metaphorical, like house as in relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like allegiance, I
yes.
guess. Yeah.
Much like House of the Dragon, if you are a Game of Thrones fan. That's what we're talking about.
Well, I'm not a Game of Thrones fan, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's the house of the family, like the family crest or the family, mm-hmm. the house is the group.
Family crest?
Yes, the
Gross.
Family crest.
They should all take baths. Nasty. Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't have house news,
oh.
Because I live in an apartment.
But it's a nice apartment.
I have neighborhood beef, but you know, yeah, no, but we've already talked about the apartment movie. So
mm-hmm,
like we won't
mm-hmm.
go further. There. This past week I did watch the new Fall of the House of Usher trailer.
Oh,
That's with the Mike Flanagan folks.
Sure, sure.
And it features classic American president Bruce Campbell.
Yes.
As Papa Usher.
Oh.
And he looks fine.
I'm so excited.
He looks very good. Also, it features a very silly ponytail on Henry Thomas.
Natural.
Who looks very ashamed about it, as he should be.
Sure, yeah.
Because, yeah.
It's
no,
very silly.
Absolute nonsense.
Oh, that's great news.
So that's my house news.
Thank
yeah.
you. That's excellent
Not
news.
Personal news, but, you know, news in the world that I encountered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so House of Flying Daggers.
Mm-hmm.
What's your history with this movie and the wuxia genre in general?
Yeah, so I don't really have a history with this movie. I honestly Googled house movies.
Yeah.
And it came up, and then I was reminded that I had wanted to see it anyway.
We do a very rigorous research
yeah,
process for this movie.
Yes, yeah. That's I don't want to reveal too much, but that's how
Dear
it works.
Google, what are other movies we could watch that have a house in them?
But I recently rewatched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and was reminded how much I love wuxia movies, and just how beautiful they are and how much they influence other movies, other genres. Yeah. So I saw this one for the first time like 2 days ago.
Okay. Sweet.
And I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Oh, it's so a good. Spectacle. It's a feast.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, kind of same. Like, I also, like, literally just saw it a couple days ago for this. And then immediately rolled right into watching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, that's so good.
Also loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately queued up The Hero, which I haven't yet watched, that was sort of like a also recommends with the same director who did Flying Daggers. So, yeah, I'm deep in it. I'm loving it.
Nice.
So I also didn't know anything about the Wuxia genre or know that it was different than martial arts movies, but apparently they're like separate things. And watching Flying Daggers and then like Crouching Tiger, so back to back, pinged something in my brain that was like, oh, these are like period dramas.
Yeah.
These aren't, you know, like I had just assumed that it was like same continuum of like fighty fighty, you know, smash smash, whatever, whatever. but they treat history like we treat like Jane Austen movies, essentially. Yeah. Like it's like a comfort viewing of a distant past.
Totally.
And it's like the past is fantasy, the past is escape, and there are these like modeled behaviors that like look romantic, even though they'd be like really restrictive if we encountered them ourselves.
Yeah. Super romanticized though.
Super romanticized. Yeah, very codified behaviors, very honor driven. Which I guess like, you know, martial arts are also honor driven, but like in this sort of like, yeah, romanticized, almost ahistorical, like looking at the past as something that wasn't necessarily there.
Mm-hmm.
And finding and creating narrative out of like the fantasy of like a past that maybe never was.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of Arthurian legend in that way. It's something to take pride in, something that people can band together around their culture and sort of come up with these mythologies. And I mean, I think, yeah, because we don't see... No, I'm not going to say that. I think it is... Wuxia movies, martial arts movies, but I think Wuxia movies in particular give off this romanticized Chinese culture that we in the West who might not know about Chinese culture kind of grab onto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that maybe is touching on something that I want to talk about later, is that like a lot of this stuff is so beautiful, but then it's also stuff that feels like Western culture in appropriating a lot of this sort of like skims off the most extreme versions of this and uses that as representative for everything.
Yeah.
So there was stuff that was familiar about this, even though I haven't seen these sorts of movies before, just because, yeah, like we're so shitty about just like being like, ah, yes, the noble warrior, or yeah, like, you know, all of these like things that have we've made representative of an entire like ancient culture and sort of like to the exclusion of any other kind of complexity or like, yeah, anything that would complicate that.
Yeah
All right, sweet, cool. So you know what's coming.
I do.
I'd like you to describe this movie in 4 keywords or less.
Okay, so 4 keywords, it's surreal.
Okay.
In the way that its action is shot, the movements are not normal human people cannot do them.
What?
I cannot do them. It's violent. It's quite violent.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely gorgeous. And it deals a lot with nature, and I would say both ecological nature and human nature.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, nice. I like those. Those are great.
Thanks.
Mine are much more shallow. So mine is dance, fighting, hotties, and shoulders.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. That movie has all of those things.
And all of them are very important to the film.
Yeah. It has dance and fighting and dance fighting.
And dance fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's tree dance fighting. There's, like, sleeve dance fighting.
I was going to say my other keyword would be sleeves.
Sleeves.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
Love a sleeve.
I do love a good sleeve.
All right. May I do a summary?
Please do.
Okay. So, in the opener, we get some text telling us that it's the ancient times in China. The current ruler is useless and in decline. There's corruption everywhere, yada yada. And, like, a group called House of Flying Daggers has given rise from the shadows to do Robin Hood stuff. So, you know, fight the bad guys, aka rich people, give to the poor, all that kind of thing. First scene is at the police station where two captains, Jin and Leo, are chatting about how there's a new leader at the House of Flying Daggers. As they talk about how they are on an impossible deadline to take him out, it's conveniently suggested that a Flying Dagger member is randomly one of the new workers at the brothel down the street. I'm not clear how they got this
Better
information.
Check it out.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, they, I think, just want an excuse to do some hanky-panky over lunch.
Sounds like it.
I think that's what it is. Defund the police is what we're saying.
Yep, 100%.
Being the younger and randier of the two dudes, I guess, Jin goes off to the brothel, and subsequently has what seems like a very nice, wholesome time, in drunken tug of war with a bunch of the girls there. but then he's like, send me your new hottie, AKA the possible secret rebel in your midst. And the madam is like, okay, but just to let you know, she's blind. And Jin is like, lol, as long as she isn't ugly. We don't care. Solid guy, Jin.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Now. He's, yeah. We're gonna talk about the dudes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So out comes the hottest hottie in all the land, and she does a very cool dance with her really long sleeves. But Jin is too much of a drunken asshole to appreciate any of this, and he assaults her just in time for Captain Leo to walk in and arrest them both. Jin for public intoxication, and May, that's the hottie, for being too hot, I guess.
Yeah, even though, like, it's
oh, she flashed her shoulders.
Exposure.
Yeah, because Jin ripped
because
her dress.
Because he ripped her dress off.
Fucking
and yet
assholes.
She's going to jail.
Well, and ridiculous. Also it seems like him arresting Jin is, like, just a cover to, like, get him out of there, you know?
Of course.
Like,
they're
taking care of their own.
Ugh.
As a side note, to keep going on this shoulder topic... This movie loves May's shoulders.
They're nice shoulders.
They're great shoulders, mm-hmm. But it constantly is, like, waving them around, so...
It's true.
We're gonna see lots more of her shoulder action later. The madam convinces Leo to let May dance for him to show what a professional she is and that her shoulder flashing is not part of her regular lifestyle. So off she goes and does another impressive thing with her long sleeves and a bunch of beans and some drums. and one of my moments of joy is just, like, how they're like, oh yeah, okay, now we do the thing. And then, like, all of a sudden, like, 50 dudes with drums, like, walk into this area and sit down and start playing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it so much.
It's like, real to-do.
Where are you keeping all of these extra musicians? In a back room somewhere, just in case this, like, lady gets arrested for shoulder flashing?
Why weren't they helping her?
Where were they? Yeah, exactly.
Were they?
Yeah, come on. So I just also want to acknowledge that, like, I'm being an idiot by describing this, but, like, it's only because I can't describe how beautiful the sleeve dancing is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, it is really something. Like, it's so magical.
Yeah, it really is.
Ugh, y'all just have to watch it for yourselves. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But all the fancy sleeve dancing is for nothing because May is outed as the Flying Dagger groupie the cops suspected she was. And she's arrested and taken to lockup, where Leo shows her the torture device they'll use on her if she doesn't spill the beans about the Flying Dagger ASAP. And it's also a very weird moment, because Leo is like... It's like, there's like this sort of underpinning of, like, sexual threat. Like,
yeah.
He's sort of, like, caressing her and whispering into her shoulder and talking about how he's gonna, like, crush her body in this machine. It's so gross.
Yeah. And how she'll never dance again.
Yeah. Before anything goes too horrifically wrong just yet, though, a mysterious figure breaks May out of jail and they go on the run. Turns out it's Jin, and he says he's a secret supporter of the Flying Dagger's work and wants to do something to kick it to the bad guys. May doesn't really buy this very sudden transformation from one of her captors / assaulters.
Yeah.
But she also doesn't seem to have a whole lot of options at this point, so off they go, with Jin supposedly fighting off his former colleagues so that May can reconnect with the Flying Dagger folks eventually. But first twist in what will be a solid hour and a half remaining of dramatic plot twists.
Yes, so many twists.
This movie loves a twist.
Truly.
Jin is working with his old buddy Leo, and together they are using Mei to track the Flying Dagger hideout so they can kill the new leader, because, remember, tight deadline, they gotta kill the new leader in, like, 10 days or less or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Jin is the real loser in this arrangement, though, because Mei keeps saying, oh, they'll find us, don't worry, whatever, whatever, sort of stringing him along. Meanwhile, all his old cop buddies keep trying to kill them. And Leo is also zero help as the, like, supposed mastermind of this plan.
Yeah.
Every time he's like, I don't know what to do.
Just don't get killed.
Just don't get killed, I guess. Here's some more arrows.
Yeah.
After many very cool fight scenes and also a creepy pervy bath scene, Mei and Jin make out a bunch. And then Mei wants to put labels on it. And Jin is like, nah, I need to be free. So Mei storms off on her own. And Jin goes off in the opposite direction. Oh, at some point also, like, fed up with being, you know, literally fed through the meat grinder of his old work buddies, Jin, like, quits Operation Flying Dagger Takedown.
Right.
So, yeah, he's free to run off. She runs off. In a forest of bamboo, Mei gets attacked by more cops. And again, like, it's impossible to describe how magical bamboo tree dancing fighting is.
Oh,
but
gorgeous.
It's, like, it, again, has to be seen to be believed. It's unlike anything yeah. Ugh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jin comes back just in time to be cornered with Mei, and it looks like it's the end for both of them, but then a whole bunch of daggers appear and kill everyone except our two heroes. And we're all like, ah yes, they aren't fooling. Those daggers do be flying.
Yep, it's true.
They're flying all over the place. Okay, so now buckle up. This is when shit gets wild.
Truly.
Jin and Mei go with the Flying Dagger people to the headquarters to meet the new leader, and surprise, it's Madam from the Peony Pavilion, which is the brothel at the beginning, and she's like, guess you didn't expect this, and we're like, we sure didn't. And then this gal is all about mind games too. So first she's like, Jin, you need to marry Mei, and Jin is like, nah, I don't wanna, because she's too hot for me. And then
True.
And then the madam is like, oh no, but you still got us, so he's like, okay, sure. And then she scoops him up with a giant net. So we're like, I guess the engagement's off, or...
There's so many moments of, like, just kidding in this movie.
It's like...
Yeah.
That old trick of lulling them into a false sense of security by telling them to marry a hottie they just met 3 days ago.
Yeah, he should have known.
And then catching them. Always expect a net after a marriage proposal.
Mm-hmm.
So now Jin is captured, as is Leo, who was still following them, I guess. It's not clear how he got there. When Leo is taken out to be killed, we get a few more rapid reversal reveals. The madam, who we just were told was the new leader, actually isn't the new leader. We barely
just
get
kidding.
Time to enjoy her. Yeah. she's just pretending. And Leo is a double agent for the Flying Daggers. He has been undercover with the cops for reasons not super... Oh, no. He said at one point that he was, there to, like, protect the old leader, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so he failed. It's not clear to me that he isn't just, like, a rogue agent of his own.
Yeah.
I think he might have actually killed the leader, or he might be a triple agent or something. Like, there's no way to trust
this
man.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, like, very chaotic.
At the very least, he's, like, terrible at follow through and also, like, hatching a well-organized plan.
Yes.
As we've seen. So, okay, anyways. So, and also big reveal, Leo and Mei used to have a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they are briefly reunited, but then Mei is like, actually, I like this new dude, Jin, now. And let me tell you, Leo does not take the news well.
No, he takes it very badly.
He takes it very badly.
Very badly, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Leo is sent back to the cops with a literal knife in his back, and Mei is told to kill Jin. So she takes him to a field, and then they do it instead. Jin then asks her to come away with him, to forget both sides, cops and robbers, the whole thing. And then she's like, no, he rides off. But then, like, immediately then, she goes after him. But while riding, gets a flying dagger to the heart from Leo, who is still very upset, it turns out.
Yeah.
Leo's a real piece of work. So Mei slowly dies in a field when Jin comes riding back and starts fighting Leo over her, like, cooling body. But then weird things happen with time because it seems like they're fighting for months, long enough for like early fall to go into like late winter and a blizzard descends. May miraculously revives long enough to go stern mommy on them, basically being like, stop fighting or I'll kill one of you.
Yeah.
And then she dies for real in Jin's arms. The end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, there's also a reversal at some point where Jin thinks that May is the daughter of the old leader.
Yeah.
And that turns out to also not be true. She just like let him, he thought he came to it on his own and then she just like didn't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
Until found out later. So many switcheroonies. I'm honestly shocked there were no like secret twins or something.
I mean, maybe they were cut.
Maybe.
I
miss any reversals? I feel like there were like too many to keep
just
track
her blindness.
Oh my god, yeah, she isn't blind.
Yeah.
So they pretend that she's blind and then she's like, oh, no, I'm not actually blind.
And that's how she
literally
says,
everything in this movie is a lie.
I'm not the daughter of the leader because his daughter is blind.
Right. There is a blind woman.
Yeah. But we don't meet her.
Yeah.
Or we do meet her, but she doesn't really figure in too much.
I mean, we don't meet her like on screen, do we? No.
Doesn't she just kind of stand there in front of the madam? Like, we see her as
is she the new leader?
I think she's the leader. And we only see her, like, her head is kind of down and she's wearing a hat.
So oh, we don't I didn't really put that together.
Because at first I was like, is that May? Has there been another switcheroo?
Oh, there was a secret twin after all.
But
oh,
maybe.
No. Okay.
Maybe.
No.
I mean, yeah.
Tricky.
Only
tricky.
God knows why.
Do you have any questions before we jump into our conversation?
Questions for you?
Questions about the movie in general.
Oh.
I mean, there's many.
There are so many.
My question, okay, I'll just tell you, my big question at the end. So she pulls like a dagger out of her heart in order to stop the two dudes from fighting. And then she like hurls it and she like stabs something. Is she stabbing a drop of blood?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh. Okay.
Or at least like getting a drop of blood on Leo or something.
Oh.
like her blood is on him or
it was unclear to me.
It was unclear to me too.
And at a very climactic emotional moment I was like, I feel like I should understand this, but I didn't.
Yeah, because it was worth, because basically she dies because she takes the knife out.
Yeah.
And so it's worth that.
It's worth stabbing a drop of blood in order to,
it's worth dying
to get this piece of whatever done.
Yeah
So that felt weird that I didn't understand.
I don't understand it either.
Also confusing for you.
Yeah,
great. So we have many things to talk about. What we've got, like the whole nostalgia romance for historical fantasy period drama thing. We can talk about the aesthetic violence of this movie, blindness and ableism.
Yep.
Time being weird. Identity and trust.
Yeah.
Where do you want to jump in?
Well, you mentioned the importance of this as a period drama. Do you want to start there?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I don't know. I was just thinking about how this movie is capturing a time and a vision that like didn't ever really exist. So thinking about ways that's depicting the past, I don't know, I hadn't anything firm that I wanted to start with, but just wanted your thoughts on what do you think about it.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it as a historical fiction or period drama, even though it clearly is. But I think this is where we get sort of a meeting of genre. Where I was so focused on it being like a wuxia film without thinking of all the implications of wuxia. But yeah, it is, like you mentioned Jane Austen before, and it is that sort of, like it has that color palette, bright, gorgeous colors, lots of pinks, lots of greens. And it has this sort of, this woman who has men after her. It seems very you know.
And there are rules that they have to follow, but breaking the rules, like, create these consequences.
Yeah, cultural norms and cultural sort of aberrations. And, of course, the costumes, which are incredibly important in this movie. Which is why I was so interested in talking about aesthetic violence. Because I was reading this article by Joseph Kupfer called Aesthetic Violence in Women in Film, Kill Bill with Flying Daggers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an A-plus title.
Yeah.
But he talks about Crouching Tiger and House of Flying Daggers as these stories... driven by women who are either precluded from the life of the martial arts or are restricted by the militarized political institutions controlled by men. In both movies, women are ineluctably wed to violence, as the realization of their purposes and their personal growth appear to them impossible without combat, either as a necessary means to or as inherent in their long-term fulfillment. And he goes on to say, unlike its predecessor, House of Flying Daggers incorporates clothing and weapons into its surrealistically portrayed violence. Not simply ancillary to the action, costuming and weaponry play essential roles in it, adding variety and novelty to the surrealistic violence. Early in the film, May's kimono provides a supernal transition from ballet to battle. And I think that's talking about the drum scene where she's playing the game in front of Leo, and her sleeves are proxies for these drum mallets. She's surrounded by a semicircle of drums. He throws a bean that hits a couple of drums, and she has to mimic the sound. And she just shoots her arms out, and her sleeves almost act on their own. And they do serve as sort of weapons.
They're like percussive mallets.
Mallets, yeah. And she uses them almost as extra arms in a couple of scenes, and it's really remarkable.
Well, and that's, like, made more clear later on in that scene when she uses that sleeve to, like, literally grab the sword off the table.
Yeah.
And wave it in front of Leo's face. And then there's sort of, like, almost, like, the physical violence of when Leo, like, shreds her sleeves. So it's, like he's doing physical harm even though he's, like, messing up her her clothing.
It looks almost painful.
Oh my god. And there's, like, all of the sleeve ripping, that, like, the shoulder sleeve ripping. So, like, she's constantly, even if she doesn't have, like, physical damage until the very end, she's constantly sustaining this sort of, like I don't even know what to call it, but it's sort of like this, like, proxy that's carrying these real scars on her.
It's her version of armor. And it's so interesting because toward the end too, when we know that she's part of the Flying Daggers, they're all wearing these sort of uniforms that allow them to blend in with the bamboo forest. And that too is an aesthetic violence, right? They're blending in. It's like their camouflage, but it's so beautiful, and they're all these really beautiful women who are part of this house, who are very, very skilled at throwing knives. And yeah, I don't think I've ever really thought about camouflage as an aesthetic, like a brilliant costuming choice, right? It seems just practical. And yet, this is both practical and beautiful. And you know, it's so delicate and so rich, almost, like it looks so sumptuous, and yet it is first and foremost practical.
Well, and then it also shows then how she sort of is separated from the Flying Daggers by going off with Jin, and, like, the fact that she's wearing that same outfit that is, like, perfect camouflage in the bamboo forest, but then when she goes to the field, they're both wearing, like, what's really loud colors that are not, like, they very much stand out, and we get this sort of, like, massive crane shot, and they look like peacocks on the ground almost in all of this dead grass. And also the moment when she's, like, saying goodbye to him after that, and she's standing in this yellow, like, treed forest. It's like it's like fall. And she's still wearing that green dress. And so we see these things that like she goes from being like very blended in with the house colors in the house setting. Mm-hmm. And then as she, you know, comes closer to Jin and makes more decisions away from that, she becomes more starkly like she herself doesn't seem to change, but the surrounding area mm-hmm. shows her so much more starkly.
Yeah, she no longer fits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, I mean, if we're talking about costuming, we have to talk about the police uniforms,
mm-hmm.
right? And how it's the same kind of thing. When they're all together, they're kind of moving as one, but then as they get sort of picked off,
mm-hmm.
they stand out so much, right? They're wearing these helmets that look kind of like hair,
mm-hmm.
and these militarized kind of uniforms, and mm-hmm. it's again just this, the aesthetics of violence, where just looking at them, you know that they are enacting violence, right? And I think it's interesting to make that, to involve the police there, because I think that has to say something about what the writers think of the police,
mm-hmm.
And the role of the police in these things as antagonists.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think knowing May and knowing she's part of the Flying Daggers, we're on the side of the Flying Daggers until May goes off on her own, and then we're on May's side. But I don't think...
Are we on the side of the Flying Daggers? It's never clear to me.
I think to some extent, just, I mean, maybe this is me personally, but because Jin's behavior is so bad and because Leo just seems pretty ineffective.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the Flying Daggers are framed as this group that is trying to take down a corrupt government.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that's always, that kind of framing is always sort of a more heroicized framing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm just thinking about how, like, okay, so the structure of the story is, like, we get this opening text that's, like sort of introduces these massive, like, almost cosmic forces of, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Tang Dynasty is in decline, the Emperor is ineffectual, you know, he's sort of overrun by all of this corruption and, like, you know, everything's in chaos. And then there's this heroic underbelly of, like, folks that are in the shadows working for good or whatever.
Mm.
But, like, as the movie goes on, it gets sort of, like, narrower and narrower.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, by the time we're in the last hour of this two-hour movie, it's essentially, like, super tightly focused on, like, this three-person drama.
Yeah. But I think even just knowing that May is with them, I think that puts me on their side, okay. As opposed to the side of the police that's trying to shut them down.
Right, of course, yeah.
That's what I mean. And then okay. when May, when they start requesting things that May can't give, then it's like, okay, well, these guys aren't as great as I thought they were. And May,
yeah,
like, I'm really on May's side.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like with these shifting identities and the fact that, like, no one ever seems to be that committed to any particular cause.
Yeah.
Like, Leo originally, like, we see him first as a cop, and then he says he's, like, with the Flying Daggers. But then he also, like, is acting sort of, like, yeah, as a chaos agent of his own.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of same with Jin, who's like an absolute himbo. He's like he's with the cops, and then he's like, you know, like mm-hmm. sees one pretty girl and is like, guess I'm not.
Yeah, yeah.
and he also is like very quick to be like, oh, we'll just leave all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, who cares? No allegiance. And May, I feel like she's the most inscrutable because she also very easily leaves.
But only after quite a while, because we think for a long time that she is the daughter of the leader.
Yeah.
And she wants vengeance, and she's, like, we believe that she's the new leader.
That's true.
I think for quite a while. Yeah, yeah. And it's not until closer to the end that we realize, like, JK, she's in no way the leader.
Yeah.
She's just like the hottie they sent in undercover.
Yeah, the woman that goes to, like, seduce people into doing things.
And it's only when they tell her to kill Jin.
Yeah.
And when Leo kind of effectively betrays her, mm-hmm. that she's like, ugh, I'm out. This is too much.
But, I don't know, it also just seems like she's already there. Like, her entire function within the Flying Daggers is to be a distraction.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it already makes it seem like she is sort of, like, so peripheral to their inner workings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we get so many, like, yeah, like, it, like, we just sort of only sort of touch the surface of what the Flying Daggers even do.
Yeah.
We see them hold, like, a meeting at one point, and then that's it.
Yeah, and considering that's the title of the movie, that's...
It's really weird. It's
weird. Yeah. Yeah. It's not, like, May and House of the Flying Daggers.
May and her massive exploits with dudes.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, she seems very
the thruple
as this undercover agent, mm-hmm. and this woman who's able to pull off a disability in order to get more information.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes, the disability.
Let's talk about that.
Ha. Ha. You know what? This is... I was thinking about our boy Jeff Healy.
Oh, yes.
Also House Movie, Roadhouse, if you haven't heard of it. and how we were talking about, just sort of the rarity of casting a blind person as a blind character.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, of course, like, I don't even expect, you know, that kind of behavior usually,
mm-hmm.
that casting choice. Yeah, what did you think about the fact that this, well, first of all, like, obviously not a blind actor playing this role.
Right.
But then also the fact that the blindness is used as another form of distraction. It's like another misdirect,
mm-hmm.
That is sort of built up massively throughout the movie, and then, like, sort of almost not even, like, dealt with. It's just sort of tossed aside.
Yeah.
It's just like a side, like, oh, also she's not blind.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not blind.
She never was. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm always suspicious when an actor plays someone with a disability when they don't have that disability. Because it just seems like, okay, well, why
this choice?
Why this choice? But at first I was like, oh, okay, she's blind. She's a badass. She's good at fighting. She's an essential part of this group. She's a love interest. Like, maybe this movie is, you know,
mm-hmm.
doing right by blind folks. And there are so many.
I mean,
at least, like, giving...
Don't them, do them any favors. Giving Come them on. Space. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
And making them, you know, like, not just the disabled person on the sidelines.
Right. Yeah.
And there's
She's the
lot,
coolest one there.
Yeah. So. And there's so much made, like, Jin keeps saying, how can a blind girl be a top showgirl?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that this is the best you have because she's blind. And May at one point says, why can't a blind girl work here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why can't I be blind
yeah.
and still be beautiful and talented? And, like, that's stupid. That makes no sense. And so she's constantly speaking back to it. And doing, you know, all these amazing things and being, you know, throwing daggers and running around. And at one point, Jin, when he's going by wind, wants her to know what he looks like, and he's like, let me help you, because she's like, I can't tell what you look like, I'm blind.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, let me show you, and he, like, grabs her hand and puts it all over his face,
mm-hmm.
and kind of mansplains
what faces are.
What faces are.
Yeah.
And she's just like, ridiculous.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, like, when it's revealed that she's not blind, it's so mad. It's just like, oh, yeah, that was just an act.
Yeah.
Like, it's not given any time. And it's like, okay, well, why, though? Like, why did she have to be blind And, like, why couldn't she have just been blind?
It makes everything ickier. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when she says, oh, well, the real leader's daughter is actually blind, but she can't fight. So I had to be the one to step in and be her. It's like, but why? Why did you have to?
Why couldn't you just?
Why couldn't you just fight and not be blind? Or why couldn't the character just be blind all the way through?
Yeah. Like, or why did you need this legend of like the old leader's daughter, you know, blind fighter out for revenge, that sort of thing? Like, I mean, it sounds super red. So
yeah,
there's that. But like, you know, there seems like there could have been other choices made.
Well, yeah. And there's, I mean, it could have been so cool if the character had been really blind, because there's so much made of, like, she sings a song at one point about glances leveling a city.
Yeah.
And there's so much said, you know, don't let beauty blind your judgment. And, what else is there? There's so much, pleasure in looking and pleasure in being looked at. Uh-huh. She enjoys being looked at. She enjoys kind of...
Oh, she's a hottie and she knows it.
Yeah, and she enjoys, like, like, air quotes, seeing things in other ways.
Mm.
Or she seems to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, just to have that taken away, when everything, I mean, there's so much about revealing and exposing in this movie, too.
Yeah.
Like, exposing her body and revealing... you know, new plot points and revealing
those dope shoulders.
Yeah, the shoulders and the soldiers in the trees, and like there's so much to see.
Mm-hmm.
And an amazing counterpoint
and things to see that you're not realizing you're seeing until, like, you know, something else happens.
Yeah, so it just seems like such a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, because the movie seems so self-conscious about putting in visual markers and visual imagery and visual dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, okay, great.
To sort of, like, the lack of other things. Like, there's very little actual dialogue in this movie.
Yeah.
It's very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emphasis on sound.
Yes.
And like ambient noise. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like, talking and like conversations are kept like very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it seemed like it's a really weird choice, right? To like make your main character a fake blind person and then have most of the like cues be like visual.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, because she, like...
I mean, it's another... I mean, so there's all the obvious reasons of, like, okay, yeah, so, like, being blind means that you're, like, not taken as seriously, or it means that people misjudge you, or they don't, you know, think you're as bad as a person as you are. Like, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So as, like, a weapon, I guess, it's something.
Yeah.
And then it's revealed when sort of like no further harm can be done to her through that method of reveal, I guess. So she's using it as like another tool in her arsenal.
Yeah.
But then it also means that, like, I don't know, there's this weird treatment of like, oh, if you're no longer blind, you're no longer special.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, oh, you're just like a regular fighter like everyone else.
And maybe it even makes her mortal.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, and there's, like, one point where I think it's, like, Jin and May are having a conversation. Or it's, like, I think actually when he is, like, oh, wait, what? She's, like, oh, yeah, I'm just, like, one of the girls. You know? One of the many people. Like, you know, sort of, like, a face in the crowd.
Yeah, I'm not special.
I'm not a hero. I'm nothing, really.
Yes, yeah.
And it was, like, her pretend blindness that was, like, the thing that made her, you know, the unique warrior, I guess.
Yeah, because it even infused her fighting style, like you were saying. Like, she, when she fights, she is not looking at what she's fighting. And she's not, like, when Leo is throwing the beans at the drums, she's not looking where the sound is. She's looking straight ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and she looks down a lot because she's listening. So, her, the motif of her blindness means the movie sound is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Because we hear things whistling through the air, and we hear just the most ambient sounds, like you were saying, when mm-hmm. we wouldn't notice them ordinarily.
Mm-hmm.
Because we understand that she is listening for all of these little things. But then to find out she doesn't have to, and
yeah.
she could have just, like, looked where she was throwing the daggers, and, like, it just sort of, it's like, this is what she could be if she were really blind, but she's not.
Yeah.
And now she's not special. So it does sort of, like,
it yeah, also made me wonder, yeah, it also made me wonder, like, just, like, carrying the premise of this beyond. Like, has she trained her whole life for this one job? Or does she act like a blind fighter all the time?
It would be so difficult.
Yeah.
Like, you would have to train for a long time.
And then, like, for what? This is, like, just, like, one job.
Yeah.
Doesn't like, make any sense.
No. It's very weird.
Plot hole.
And it's just, like, he's like, gotcha. And then she's like, well, I gotcha. And,
yeah.
like, they just, like, the blindness, not blind thing is, like, her final gotcha.
Also, the power dynamics of it all are very interesting, because when she is pretending to be blind, there's a real, like, oh, Jen is sort of, like, taking care of her, but he's also, like, there's this sort of, like, cat and mouse kind of thing that's happening, where he'll be like, oh, I'm, like, making you a nice little bath, I'm gonna walk away, and then he doesn't.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're still there. But, like, it is a different set of power dynamics than when it's clear that she is sighted.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with her and Leo, like, the power dynamics, I mean, there's also, like, these parallel scenes of when, so Leo is doing the bean thing with her sleeve dancing, but then later, when they have the reunion, her and Leo, he's blindfolded,
yeah,
and he does the pebble thing, or she does the pebble thing, and he has to throw daggers at the trees,
mm.
sort of like in a very, yeah, sort of like part two of their game. But it's like, yeah, like the power dynamics keep shifting, but in no way is Leo ever as vulnerable as she appeared earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and even when Leo ends up leaving, like, it kind of turns out that nobody has as much power as we think they do at the beginning.
Yeah,
but especially not May. Like, we think May is the leader of this resistance. We know that she's this amazing otherworldly kind of fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, like, yeah, she just gets a dagger in the heart and dies like anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, well, she comes back. And then
I mean, she resurrects. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Be fair.
Yeah. But, like, she is just like anybody else.
And her end is very anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm, very.
And yeah, even her sort of, like, momentary return to life and choosing to, like, end it on her own terms feels very restricted and, like, mm-hmm. yeah, they're all essentially dead anyways.
Yeah.
So it's not like she's actually making a choice. She's just sort of, like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, more making a point, I guess.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a shared conversation, that final fight, and mm-hmm. she's just sort of, like, one final bit of punctuation.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it, because I think the violence in this movie does serve as conversation,
mm-hmm.
or a form of conversation, because it's so artistic, and it's so, yeah, there's a grammar to it. There's a way of understanding what the moves mean.
And a way of also, like, sort of seeing the ebb and flow in the structure of it,
mm-hmm.
and how it often is sort of bleeds through from, like, other things that happened before. So yeah, like, a tender moment between a couple then turns really violent when the dude feels rejected, or yeah, like a moment of dance then very quickly becomes a moment of like more aggressive hand-to-hand combat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also sort of like these like intensifying moments and then sort of like more artistic like ebbs and flows that happen within it.
Yeah, which kind of leads into me wanting to say a bit more about the men in this movie, because like you were talking about a power imbalance, and that's absolutely true. And I think we see that the biggest shift, I mean, Jin shifts, you know, first he's essentially assaulting her, and then he wants to, you know, be her boyfriend for a while, but nothing serious.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we also see Leo kind of turn on a dime.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much, if I can't have you, no one can. And it's the ways in which she becomes property.
Yeah.
And even, like, less valuable property once they find out she's sighted, or once Jin finds out she's sighted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's gross. And I think it's interesting that we have these two guys, and then the House of Flying Daggers, which is all women.
Mm-hmm.
And very, it seems that way on purpose. They don't seem to have much time for men.
Yeah.
At all. Even Leo, who's supposedly working for them.
Oh, yeah. They very easily dismiss him. They walk across him, like, assaulting May and are like,
bye.
Don't rape women. Also, get out of here.
Yeah. Like a zero tolerance policy. Yeah.
Which is great. Love to see it. But, yeah, he's very much kept on, like, the periphery of whatever they're doing as well.
Mm-hmm. And he's, like, at the beginning, he seems like the level-headed one, the one who's responsible, and, like, he
seems like a superior officer, even though there's kind of the same level.
But he's, like, the sober cop who's doing his job.
By the book, folks, yeah.
To the degree where he'll arrest his fellow cop.
Arrest.
Yeah. Loose air quotes arrest. Yeah. But, like, he seems very intent on law and order.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the cops winning.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, I mean, these kinds of twists are all over Wuxia movies, but it's like, you don't see them coming because they don't entirely make sense.
Yeah.
Which is great, and I love that. But this was just like, wait, now he's a maniac? Like, because
who's on, like,
dumped?
A murder spree?
Yeah.
Because his ex-girlfriend, who, by the way, he hasn't seen in 3 years.
Yeah.
Didn't want to kiss him?
People change, man.
Come on. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
This is the thing that I kept thinking as like these reversal reveals kept, you know, flying fast and loose and like piling up, because it was like, oh man, this should be so silly.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I really felt the weight of like these emotional transactions.
Absolutely.
And I'm not quite sure how that was pulled off. I think, like, obviously, like, this is a beautifully made movie. Mm-hmm. And the actors are, like, you know, top of the line.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone's doing an incredible job. But I also think it's because of, like, while there is all of this, like, frenetic content, it never feels rushed.
Yeah.
And I always feel like there's, like, loads of space to sort of, like, sit with feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes when the camera is, like, completely still and it's just, like, yeah, May standing in a forest watching her lover ride away for, like, a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
And I think it's those moments that just sort of, like, settle me, even when the content feels so bananas.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, yeah, the visuals have a lot to do with that. The sound has so much to do with it. I found the sound so calming and really helped to set the pace. Because you're right, the fighting is so fast and the plot is moving so fast, but it doesn't feel fast.
No.
It feels
very quiet.
Slow. Yeah, very quiet, very slow, but not in a boring way. Like, it just feels like you're kind of floating down a lazy river.
Yeah.
In a way.
Like, the way in which intense scenes sort of become more subdued or more pared down is so fascinating to me. Like when they're on the run and they've got like this whole platoon of cops or whatever coming after them, and you should hear like everyone crashing through the forest.
Yeah.
And all you hear is like May's breathing and a tiny bit of leaf rustling.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, it's the same when the cops are climbing the bamboo, and they're climbing so high that they're kind of bending the bamboo over, and you just kind of hear the bamboo whistling through the wind. You don't, like, it's so beautiful, even though they're essentially like catapulting themselves off of this bamboo. It's just, it's balletic. It's so graceful and gentle, and like it's hard to believe that that type of violence and war can take place in that kind of environment, where it's just green and beautiful and alive and prolific.
It's a real cognitive dissonance, actually, because I think I'm so used to seeing violence that is brutal. Obviously, the John Wick movies are, like, deeply influenced by martial arts. But even those, like, having it be so, so intense and that, like, you feel the brutality of it because it looks brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, like, yeah, everything, like, it's still brutal, but it feels softened somehow?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I guess that's also, like, the sound and the visuals, like, all of these pieces working together.
I wonder, too, if it's partly because they're not using guns.
That could be. Yeah. Like,
there's something so romantic about swords and daggers and, you know, these things where you have to have real skill and or you have to be very close.
And the weapons don't sound like weapons. They sound like other things. So, like, these sharpened bamboo spears flying through the air don't sound to my ears recognizably like something that is, like, could kill you.
Yeah, and even, like, with the daggers, there are no clangs.
Yeah.
Like, it's all whooshes flying through the air. So you get all of these natural sounds from these unnatural objects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really...
Yeah.
It's easy to forget that these are, like, deadly weapons because they're so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that might be what I'm trying to say. That it sort of visually and orally it doesn't compare to what I now associate as violence.
Mm-hmm.
So even just sort of that, like, time out of mind, different context, that buffer of, like, you know, ancientness, makes it also seem less deadly, even though, like, people are dying in front of us.
Yeah. There are just as many people dying.
Yeah.
In horrific ways, but it's prettier.
That's exactly what I'm trying to say. It's just like everything is nicer looking, so guess it's not as grim.
Yeah, which is, like, it really kind of makes me think about the way I look at violence in movies.
Uh-huh.
Because it really depends on aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not, like, for me, it's not necessarily about, like, violence is terrible, even though cognitively, like, that's what I think violence is bad. I'm not pro-violence. But in movies, it's so highly choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something impressive about it, or something.
We can see the artistry.
You can see exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, you can see the artistry. And in this movie in particular, the artistry is absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, further to that point, I will say, so the one point where I was sort of shocked by the violence, actually the two points, were the points of sexual violence.
Yes. Yeah.
Where Jin suddenly grabs May when she's dancing, and then when Leo, like, turns on a dime.
Yeah.
When they're having, like, an intimate moment. And violates her there too. Like, those are the two moments that I was like, oh my god, this is, like, this is horrific. In a way that, like, all of those beautiful dance fight scenes, like, did not touch me the same.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's because she can't hold her own in those situations. Like, there is that's the starkest power imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When she can't defend herself. But when she's, you know, able to fight with daggers and jumps and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
She is, like, she's kind of the one to beat.
Yeah. I think also, though, like, reading violence as beauty or sort of seeing the beauty in violence, those two are also moments in which there's no pretense made that this is anything but an ugly act.
Yes, I agree.
So it's very clearly, like, a brutal thing that's happening. They're not trying to make it into, like, a weird dance moment.
No, they're very separate.
Yes.
Very, very separate.
So it's, like, yeah even, like, visually demarcated as, like, oh, no, this is beyond.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. Do you... Take us out of this. What's something to leave on a high note here?
I mean, I just have to say it again. The way nature is used in this movie is, like, it's just absolutely... gorgeous. Oh.
Yeah, and feeds into the whole, like, suspended time moment. Yes.
It reminds me of kind of Shakespearean forest scenes where they're sort of this otherworldly supernatural realm.
Like a Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah, it's where, like, anybody can be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just
like trickster shapes.
It doesn't count as the real world.
Yeah.
I
also have a theory about the different nature realms. So I think, like, the forest is positioned as a place for secrets and for secret meetings.
Yes.
And for shifting identities. And then the field areas are when things are, like, very clearly, like, out in the open.
Yeah.
but like, there's a kind of honesty to them as well. Mm-hmm. And a kind of, like, straightforwardness.
Yeah.
And so the conflicts that happen in the forests are very different from the conflicts that happen in the fields. And also the same thing with, like, intimate moments that happen in the forest versus the fields. So, like, visually separated, like that, I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
I also really love the, like, final scene where it seems like time just gets suspended, but also gets, like, fast-forwarded, kind of. So time sort of is paused when Leo and May go their separate ways. But then as they all converge on the field, it suddenly, like, starts snowing.
Yeah.
And we get these weird moments of, like, oh, is it spring again? Is it, like, sort of, like, the trees, like, sort of come into color and then fade out again into white?
Yeah. It's so interesting. Like, I have no idea what the timeline of this movie is.
No.
And I was also struck by the cops or the soldiers, whatever they are, in the top of the bamboo trees are also frantically, like, cutting bamboo and sharpening it into spears.
Uh-huh.
And it just seems like in no time at all, they're just, like, making spears as they go. Like,
yeah.
Just, like... like, cut, throw, which, of course, is bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not real.
It's like fast-forward time or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Yeah. So, again, in that, it just seems like time is...
a fluid object.
A fluid object. It's a flat circle. And yeah, I think it's so fascinating that, depending on where they are in nature, I agree with you. Like, I think they... different spaces mean very different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it shapes behavior. And yet time is, you know,
also doing its own tricky thing. Yeah. It's like these moments get like the emotion of a moment sort of, like, swells it so that time sort of follows emotionally what's happening. Maybe. I don't know. I just made it up.
Love it.
Great.
So smart.
Great. All right. Do you have anything you want to say before we jump to theme corner? Theme corner.
I'm good with going to theme corner.
Okay, great. So, theme corner. Da, 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 da. House. What do we think about how, so we talked a little bit at the outset about how this one is finally the one that positions House as an idea rather than a thing.
Yes. Yeah. And an idea that is, I mean, I keep coming back to this idea of sort of chosen family and mm-hmm. how, you know,
familia.
They're not necessarily related, mm-hmm. but they all have this common purpose and this common unity against mm-hmm. Their oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something so beautiful about thinking about that
mm-hmm.
and how, yeah, a house is, it just like the other two films, here we have a house kind of catching the people who don't belong in the other, in the outside world, in a way.
I like it. Yeah, yeah, and it's also like an ideal to aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm once again caught by the idea that this is like a place not designed for rest, though.
Yes, totally.
This is also another place of like activity, a place where you like
discipline,
do shit. Yeah, you're yeah. disciplined. You possibly may die.
Mm-hmm.
You very likely may die.
And yet at least this one's very much in nature.
Yeah. Yeah. So it feels like holistic in a way that the other two don't.
Yeah. It's more like life giving, I think, than life draining.
Yeah, although, would you want to join the House of Flying Daggers?
No, yeah. Not unless I was very good at throwing daggers.
Well, also, no one seems trustworthy.
No, that
like,
is
no
true.
One trusts anyone else. No one relies on anyone else.
Well, I think
everyone's a shifting bag of identities.
But it seems like May is an outlier in the House of Flying Daggers. Like, they all seem pretty united.
Okay.
Like, all of, you know, when she's kind of like, sure, I'll kill Jin. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're all kind of united behind their leader.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I think most of them are in the mindset that whatever the leader says goes. Which
yeah.
I'm not saying is a great idea. But
okay, I see where, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Blindly following authority. Yeah, okay, cool, yeah, yeah. Nice.
No, I just think, like, it is a close-knit group of people who share an ideology.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't mean everybody thinks the same way or likes the same things or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but they do have this, they are united around this very significant thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I will say, don't want to be a member of the House of Flying Daggers, but I do want one of those hats.
Oh, 100%.
Those woven hats are so dope.
Those whole outfits are beautiful.
Oh, they're lovely.
Yeah.
But particularly the hat.
Yeah, I did love that.
I really want one of those hats. Because I think it's summer, man. You just need something cool and shady.
Yeah, and I think you could really pull one off.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's my aspirations. Okay, moments of joy. What are your moments of joy?
I loved the drum scene. I loved it so much. And the thing I possibly loved...
Wait. Oh, the bean drum?
The bean drum, where
yeah.
she's
yeah.
hitting the drums with her sleeves.
Yeah.
But the part I loved the most is when that rascal Leo picks up a handful of beans and chucks them at the drums, and they go... like, they're just scattering and bouncing off of each other. And she's supposed to mimic the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And she just starts, like, beating random drums.
Yeah, she's freestyling it.
Freestyling yeah. it, but supposedly she's getting it exactly right. Which is just, like...
But the joke is that, like, no one would be able to tell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But she's, like, going for it anyway. And it's like, that's impossible and ridiculous that you're even trying. But, yeah, go for it. Do it. So it's, yeah, it just...
She's a pro.
Yeah. That just gave me a lot of joy. And, yeah, just the how beautifully
mm-hmm.
it's shot.
Mm-hmm.
That just made me very happy. I enjoyed watching this movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's yeah. so great. Can't wait to watch more.
Yeah.
I had a couple, and they were around Jin, who I think has real Channing Tatum energy, quite honestly.
Yeah.
He's like a less buff Channing Tatum.
He was in Chungking Express.
I know!
Mad respect, because that movie is awesome.
Oh my god. Takeshi Kaneshiro? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Such a hottie. It's gonna be my question later. Andy Lau or Takeshi Kaneshiro? Which would you? No, so I thought, yeah, the whole dancing scene at the Peony Pavilion was amazing.
Yeah.
part one and part two. Also thought that when May was first like, Jin, what do I call you? And he's like, call me the Wind.
Yeah.
I was like, oh boy. And then the rest of the movie, she's just roasting him. She's like, what does the Wind want to do now?
Yeah. I mean, he just leaves himself wide open for fart jokes, too. Like, wide open.
It's like, no one is saying any fart jokes. What? No. Like, oh my God.
We're not in the movie.
It's true.
We were not involved in the writing process, which is why there is a distinct dearth of fart jokes.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the bisexual drama moment when May dresses Jin in, or Jin dresses May in his clothes.
Yeah, that's when he seems to get really into her. And he likes it. Yeah.
And he says something like, next time I'm going to the Peony Pavilion, I'm going to get all the girls to dress up as men. And it's like, okay, dude.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. We see it. do you have any movie connections?
Well, Crouching Tiger.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I also can't help but feel that Wushan movies in general heavily influenced movies like The Matrix, like John Wick.
Mm-hmm.
All of these movies with these bonkers stunts that we see today, mostly done by Keanu Reeves.
Mostly done by Keanu Reeves.
And just how movies from different cultures do infuse Hollywood movies.
Uh-huh.
And so it is really worthwhile, if you're not much of an international film fan, just go check some out, because you will see similarities, or you might even see where your
the languages might still be very
from.
Familiar for
yeah,
you.
There, yeah. There is an intersecting grammar, mm-hmm. I think.
Definitely. Yeah, I was going to say like Kill Bill and you know, another one.
another one.
Fuck you. Oh my God, is Mulan is a wuxia film, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay.
Or at least like modeled after one.
Yeah. Okay. And then still gotta see the hero. It's coming up for me.
Oh, I'm excited.
Gotta make it happen. Okay, well, in summation, what did we learn? Juiciest bits. This is the real question.
Uh-huh.
So Andy Lau or Takeshi Kaneshiro?
I mean, I gotta go Takeshi because at least he's somewhat redeemable.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat. But somewhat. Not really. But at least he doesn't have, like, a tantrum.
Yeah. Okay.
And I love him in Chungking Express, and that's coloring my
okay.
My vote.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
Okay, my follow-up was going to be, who wore the ponytail best?
May,
okay, yeah. She has a powerful pony. Yeah.
I mean, her look was just top-notch.
Yeah. Oh,
but
I never
Takeshi's knew. Look was also great. Yeah, as soon as he got out of that police uniform, I was like, okay.
Yeah. The blue. Mm-hmm. The blue.
Yeah, the blue is nice.
Loved it.
And I learned that I want to wear more longer sleeves. Mm-hmm. That will be my winter look.
Okay. Yeah. Invest in some sleeves. Drums.
Yeah, I'll be like smacking everything with my sleeves and feeling really cool.
You can't
watch.
Wait to see it.
Just
yeah,
you wait.
No. Everyone needs a hobby. I learned, don't try to get a fuckboy to commit.
That is a good lesson.
You and he and your ex-boyfriend probably all will die.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it happens.
Yeah.
It's just a ripple effect of chaos.
Yeah. Oh, and also this movie teaches us that being ableist is for chumps. So
oh,
don't
yes.
do it.
Doy. Yeah. Yeah. Don't do it. It just is not great. It's not ethical. And it makes everyone confused.
It's true. Yep.
Because we're like, why you gotta do
why
that?
Why bother?
Yeah.
Just be cool to people. And don't appropriate.
Oh my God.
Don't appropriate
another's experience.
Yeah. That's all we
yeah,
ask.
There you go. Oh, look at that. A moral at the end of all this.
Yeah, who would have thought we're doing a PSA?
Butts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which would you?
Which butt would I prefer beyond Takeshi Kaneshiro's?
Oh, that's what we were doing. Okay, all right.
Is that what we were doing? Or...
Oh, I was just pitting the two dudes against each other.
Okay. Well... I mean, this is another problem where nobody really has that much of a butt.
See, in this case, I'd go with Andy Lau's, but, you know.
Yeah. I still, you know, Takeshi's. Takeshi, you're real.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
It's sure. It's just a whole look.
Okay. All right. Fair. Mm. I can't fight you on this.
I like.
He is radiantly beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I do not condone his actions.
You don't condone his actions.
But he is radiantly beautiful.
But he's very nice to look at.
Yep, it's true.
All right. Well, here we end.
Here we end.
Chapter 3 of the House series. We don't know how many more there will be.
No. If you're sick of it, let us know.
Dear listener, you are as in the dark as we are about most things.
Don't
hold us to anything.
Yeah, this
we
is
don't
our
know.
Process. Don't yeah. Don't diss our process.
We're just having fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all
right.
For the juiciest bits, I've been Mandy, speaking about houses.
You've
buy
been
a house,
Mandy?
Won't you? No, I've been Charlie.
Yeah, you've
oh,
been
yeah,
Charlie.
I've been Charlie.
I have been Mandy, but would happily be Charlie also.
Sure.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts on houses? Invest.
They're great.
Adopt, don't shop.
Nice work if you can get it. May everybody have secure housing.
Amen.
My wish. Yeah.
Amen.